when that storm comes, don't run for cover when that storm comes. Don't run for cover when that storm comes. Don't run for cover. Don't run from the coming storm, 'cause there ain't no use in running when that rain falls. Let it wash away when that rain falls. Let it wash away when that rain falls. Let it wash away. Let it wash away that falling rain, the tears and the trouble. When those lights flash, you'll hear that thunder roar. When those lights flash, you hear that thunder roar. When those lights flash, you hear that thunder roar. Will you listen to that thunder roar? Let your spirit soar when the love calls. Will you open up your door when that love calls? Will you open up your door when that love calls? Will you open up your door? You gotta stand on up and let it in. You gotta let love through your door when that storm comes.
Storm coming.
Don't run for cover when that storm comes. Don't run for cover when that storm comes.
Storm coming.
Don't run for cover. Don't run from the coming storm, 'cause you can't keep a storm from coming. 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 Coming, 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 coming.
Good morning. Welcome to the first Chapel of Spiritual Life Week. The theme is living in the valley, wondering and wandering. The valley isn't always a bad place to be. The valley is a fertile ground, a place where things happen. And often we think of the valley as a bad space. Today in chapel, we're going to talk about the questions, the doubts, the fears, times of transitions that we've had in our lives and the impact that that makes in our relationship with God. We're not going to leave you in a place of resolution or probably hope. We're going to leave you with the questions. Friday, the same four people will share again. And when they share, they'll share what they learned from these times of questioning and wandering and doubting. The story panels, the banners in the front, are made to tell a different story. And that as we tell our stories, we need one another. That our stories are meaningless unless we have the community. And so that's what the banners symbolize here above. Just want to remind you that chapel during Spiritual Life Week is longer, so it will go till 10:40. and you don't have to worry because your classes don't start until 10:50. So just so that you know that in case somebody asks a question of why you're late, obviously they didn't know that it was Spiritual Life Week, and you can let them know because this is a special week for chapels. Rebecca York has written a chorus of voices, some from the Psalms, from Job, from other kinds of places, people in the Bible who are asking questions. And the readers will begin with that, followed by there'll be four different people sharing. There'll be a theatrical response using Psalm 121 by Chris Parks. And then Dominic Berthold will have a drumming response as well in between each of the speakers. I invite you to this time of worship and to what God is doing in the midst of our stories.
Why, God? Why? Why me?
Have you forgotten to be merciful? Please, God, rescue me from the mire. Do not let me sink.
Has your unfailing love vanished forever? Has your promise failed me for all time?
O Lord, come quickly to help me. You are my help and my deliverer.
O my God, do not delay.
Your hands have shaped me and made me. Will you now turn and destroy me?
Lord, do not forsake me. Do not be far from me, my God. Come quickly to help me, my Lord and my Savior.
O Lord, come quickly to help me. You are my help and my deliverer.
O God, do not delay.
Do not hide your face from your servant. How long, Lord, must I call for help? Do you not listen?
Will you reject forever? Will you never show your favor again?
Why then did you bring me out of the womb?
Do not hide your face from your servant. Answer me quickly, for I am in trouble.
O Lord, come quickly to help me.
You are my help and my deliverer.
O my God, do not delay. Why, God?
Why?
Why me?
Is any suffering like my suffering that was inflicted on me, that the Lord brought on me in the day of his fierce anger?
Answer me, Lord, out of the goodness of your love. In your great mercy, turn to me.
O Lord, come quickly to help me. You are my help and my deliverer. O my God, do not delay. No one is near to comfort me, no one to restore my spirit.
See, Lord, how distressed I am. I am in torment within, and in my heart I am disturbed.
Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing?
Why, God?
Why?
Why me?
Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself from me in times of trouble?
How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me?
Come near and rescue me, redeem me. Please, be pleased, O Lord, to save me.
O Lord, come quickly to help me. You are my help and my deliverer. O my God, do not delay.
Good morning. My name is Vanessa Sandoval. I'm a senior nursing major, and this is a part of my story. It all started about 2 years ago with just a sore back. My brother thought maybe he had pulled a muscle while he was working out or something. So first he tried a few different therapies before going to his doctor. Next thing I knew, I was getting a phone call. I answered. The voice on the other side was strong, as strong as it always was, as he said, I'm on the way to UVA for emergency spinal surgery. But don't worry, I'll be okay. But of course I worried. All 9 hours of that entire complex surgery, I worried. But thank God, the surgery went well, and there was no devastating complications. I never left his side during his admission to the hospital. Seeing one of the strongest persons in my life be spoon-fed their meals was so hard in so many ways. But at least he was healing well, I thought. About 2 weeks after he was discharged from UVA, and 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, we sat in a small room, my brother, myself, and my mom, with a doctor, and our eyes met. My brother and my eyes met as we both listened to a complete stranger crush both of our hearts. Slowly, I saw his face go from calm to utter disbelief. I can't imagine what mine looked like. I felt my tears silently roll down my cheeks. Absolutely nothing could have prepared us for what had just been said. Cancer. I backpedaled. This was a mistake, right? This wasn't real. All of a sudden, I felt like I didn't know who I was, where I was, or what I was doing. Suddenly, I was trying to swallow a brick instead of my saliva. I tried to listen to him speak. I tried to listen to the doctor speak, but all I could think was, no, no, this isn't happening. This isn't real. This isn't actually happening. This is all a mistake. Tissue break. But as the doctor kept speaking, the bombs in my brain kept exploding. As he explained, unfortunately, you have the fastest growing of its class, and this type is extremely rare, and there's no good treatment options for you. And even as far as saying, don't look it up online, it'll only make things worse. But the worst one was, we honestly don't know how long you have. If that wasn't heart-wrenching enough, I don't know what was or what ever will be. That was my brother, my best friend, and I felt like my hands were tied behind my back and my mouth was duct taped shut. I couldn't do anything. I wanted to yell, my brother's only 23, he's healthy, he works out, he can't have cancer. He doesn't have cancer. You're wrong. But I don't even think I could have formed those words, or even make a sentence. Next thing I knew was the end of our conversation, and it was left off with, let me know if you have questions. Of course I have questions, but I just can't formulate them. And we were ushered away. I will never forget watching my invincible brother silently sit through the car ride home as tears streamed steadily down his cheeks. Life as I knew it was gone. I felt like I had lost control of my mind, my senses, my everything. But most horrifically, I felt God had completely lost control of not only my life, but my brother's as well. I felt completely backstabbed and defeated. Like the life had literally just been sucked out of me. Where was the God who loved and cared, who didn't want to see his children suffering? Did he not know what this would do to me? Did he not see me? Did he not know how crippling this was to me? Did he not know I needed my brother, that he had become my best friend, and that I needed him in my life? As someone who had grown up thinking questioning God was wrong, I did a whole lot of questioning. Thanksgiving Day, I clearly remember watching my brother struggling to move, still recovering from his surgery, and thinking, I have absolutely nothing to be thankful for. There wasn't an hour where I didn't ask God why. and there wasn't an hour that didn't see tears of the deepest hurt I had ever felt in my life. I felt like God betrayed me and my brother, as well as my family, and I could do nothing but question his love and mercy. My brother was now a cancer patient, and God felt miles away, not to mention I had never felt so weak and ill-equipped to handle real life.
I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from?
And all God's people said,
amen.
I don't know very many of you, but those of you who know me or under whose feet the good Lord has ever moved will know that I'm not up here under my own power. So the assignment was to talk about how you feel about God in a time when you have a lot of doubts or questions or fears. So to do that, I had to start at a place that I was comfortable, you know, where me and the good Lord had the same plan and things were going the way I had planned or anticipated or expected or even worked hard for. I must be on the right path. All is right and well with the world. And then life happens and things change, either gradually or suddenly. You find yourself in a place that's not so comfortable. But I understand that's the way of life. So my first reaction is to comply. When my kids were little, I started this thing where I'd start this sentence and stop in the middle and see how they finished it, mostly just to see what kind of craziness they would say. So I was working in the house one day when they were pretty small, and I said, and all God's people said, and this tiny little voice said, let's go to town. So several weeks ago, we were driving to football practice. And my younger son, who's 9, he's all ready. He's got his cleats on, got his pants on, got his helmet in his hand, loves football practice, and he's ready. So I was driving down the road, and I said, and all God's people said, he never missed a beat. He said, yes, sir. So I comply. Yes, sir. Maybe don't like where this is going or where I'm at, but yes, sir. Sometimes my yes is a little bit more enthusiastic than it is at other times. But sometimes time goes on, and I begin to get impatient. I'm waiting, I'm waiting, I'm waiting. What can I do while I'm waiting? And days go by, and the weeks go by, and the months, and the semesters, and the years go by. And either nothing changes or my circumstances get worse. And I begin to complain. And I wonder, did I make the wrong choice? Maybe I should try harder. What is it that I'm supposed to learn here? Have I somehow wandered down the wrong path? Haven't I paid enough for that stupid decision? Wasn't there an easier way to learn this lesson? And I get impatient with God. Then after a while, I try to man up, right? Suck it up and quit complaining. And sometimes I wonder. You said that your yoke was easy and your burden was light. So did you lie or did I misunderstand that? But God is not man that he should lie. So eventually, I get to a point where I concede. When I've had enough and I think I can hardly breathe, I cry uncle. I tap out. When my boys were old enough to scrap, the older one would generally get the best of the little one, and we had to tell him, say uncle, to which he would reply, ah, Uncle Tim. But uncle can look different to different people, and I don't know what uncle looks like for you. Maybe uncle for you is a spouse or a parent who's lost a job. Maybe uncle's when you're waiting in the ICU. Maybe it's a son or a brother or a friend in jail. Maybe you're 3 years in and wondering if you picked the wrong major. Maybe your uncle is that call saying you need a second round of chemo. Or maybe it's a no after what seems to be the 27th job interview. And at this point, I feel almost like God is an opponent or that older brother squishing me to where I can't breathe. The rule of uncle, and in the UFC, when you tap out, your opponent's supposed to let up. But not always so in life. So even when I cry uncle, sometimes nothing seems to change.
I will lift. 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 I lift. I lift. I lift my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from?
My name is Ron Schultz, and I'm in my fourth year of teaching here in the education department. Maybe it could be attributed to growing up as a PK in a Mennonite family where we were taught not to toot our own horn. Another common saying was, "Pride goeth before the fall." Seeking humility was also the basis of a familiar Sunday school song that included the lyrics, "Jesus first, myself last, and others in between." Not that I disagree with any of those perspectives, but combined with my late bloomer tendencies and a bad habit of comparing myself to others, it's probably not at all surprising that I struggled with a low self-image for much of my childhood and adolescent years. When I was in fifth grade, a sixth grade boy used to call me sissy a lot. And although I was greatly insulted, he probably had some justification. It is true that I sang soprano in our middle school choir until eighth grade, when I finally graduated to the alto section. It wasn't until high school until I finally began to sing a traditionally male voice part. I also enjoyed playing lots of different sports, but my favorite was field hockey, not a traditionally male sport where I come from. But I had three older sisters, and that's what we played in the backyard growing up. If I wanted to play basketball or soccer or baseball, I was on my own. I also had an aspiration to be an elementary school teacher. Again, not a career goal shared by very many young boys. The teasing didn't deter me from any of these goals or involvements, but it did result in me feeling inferior to others, especially other guys. And it didn't help that my three closest male friends in high school were great at everything else that I enjoyed doing. Dan was an all-state choir selection. Rod was a Lancaster Lebanon League all-star from our soccer team. And Dave, well, what didn't Dave do? He had the highest SAT score from our class, and he went on to get his doctorate before the age of 30. And I'm still working on mine 20 years later. All three of them were married before I even had my first real date. Anyway, you've got the picture. Even though I received affirmation for my gifts at school, at church, and then later in my profession, these seeds of self-doubt and inadequacy were pretty deeply rooted. My faith and relationship with God were always an important part of my life, and it wasn't that I ever really blamed God for these personal struggles of mine. I did, however, ask him to change this image that I had of myself in comparison to others. I remember a song that I learned during a training school for a short-term missions program. The song was called, "I Will Change Your Name." The first part of the song says, "I will change your name. You shall no longer be called wounded, outcast, lonely, or afraid." But I would say to myself, that seems a little extreme. I don't really feel that way. It's more that I just feel inadequate, not good enough. But it was the second part of the song that resonated more with me. "I will change your name. Your new name shall be confidence, joyfulness, overcoming one. Faithfulness, friend of God, one who seeks my face." That was what I really wanted. I began to overcome some of these feelings of inferiority during my college years. After graduating from EMC, my first teaching job was in a middle school. And then the second year, I was able to move into a fourth grade classroom where I really found my niche. The next 5 years were great. I was doing what I wanted to do, teaching at a grade level I loved, in a school in which I had grown up as an elementary student, and with very supportive colleagues and parents of my students. Life was good. Even though my wife Regina and I were in agreement about being open to a long-term missionary or service assignment at some time, I would have been content to stay where I was for the rest of my career. But that was short-lived, and soon the comforts and securities were removed. My wife was feeling that after 6 years, we were being nudged out of Lancaster County and onto something else. Since the door to mission opportunities wasn't open for us at that point, we moved with our two young children to her hometown in a rural area outside of Richmond, Virginia. Not only was I no longer teaching, but I worked for her uncle for the next 2 years at his dairy supply business as a warehouse manager. I knew nothing about farming. And answering phone calls from southern farmers about their need for teat salve and hoof sanitizer took me out of my comfort zone. In fact, it took me several months until I could actually understand their strong accent over the phone. The dairy business is certainly a noble occupation, but not an area to boost my sense of worth or competence. When God did pave the way for our family to partner with Easter Mennonite Missions, it seemed like a perfect fit for us to go to Cusco, Peru, since they had a medical ministry, and my wife is a nurse, and they were hoping to start a school. I was really anticipating the opportunity to teach in an international setting, but stepping into a situation where there was no school and being asked to get one started was not what I was prepared to do. I never saw myself as a school administrator, and now I was being asked to help navigate the bureaucracy of the education department in Cusco, a daily adventure, in order to get the school up and running, and then teach 4- and 5-year-olds for that first year. On top of this, any male that had ever come to Cusco under the mission board was assumed to be a pastor and church planter, whatever else his vocation might be. So 2 months after arriving in Cusco, and while I was still trying to learn the language, culture and customs and public transportation routes around the city. I was asked to preach my first sermon in Spanish to a group of dear brothers and sisters in Christ whose first language was actually Quechua. God, I said, I can't do this. Learning Spanish as a 30-something, I was willing to do. Teach in another country, though a stretch for my first years of teaching, was also something that I was looking forward to. But the combination of all these other factors was more than I had bargained for. God, I'm quite certain you've got the wrong person for the job here. I feel completely inadequate.
I lift my eyes. I lift my eyes. I lift my eyes. Where does my help come from?
I'm Maddie List, and I'm a sophomore, and my major is Religious and Intercultural Studies. 4 years ago, I was a sophomore in high school, and I transferred schools to a private school. I was excited to go to this new school, and I loved it when I was there. I had a great time, made great friends, played field hockey and loved that, loved being on the team. And I just love my classes. Academically, it was a great place for me. And I was challenged, and I just really enjoyed school and was thankful for that after a rough freshman year of high school. And then 2 months into that year, I started getting headaches every single day and was just in pain all the time. I started going to the nurses about halfway through every single school day and then calling my mom to have to come and pick me up. And eventually it got to the point where my parents said, we're pulling you out of school. You need to take 2 months to just be at home, to rest, to be in a stress-free environment, and that'll get you better. And you'll eat healthy foods and get tons of sleep and not be working at all, so you'll get better. And that didn't end up happening. I continued to get worse. My headache ended up becoming chronic, meaning that it was just constant and it never went away. And so I wasn't able to go back to school. And in this time period, my life was just turned upside down. It felt like I lost everything. I ended up being in bed just all the time because my headache was too painful and too debilitating for me to go out and do anything, to hang out with friends. I just was in too much pain to have the energy to do this. I couldn't go to classes, so I lost friendships, I lost academics, I lost sports. My diet was changed, and I wasn't allowed to eat most foods, and so I lost food, and just felt so isolated in that time, and alone. And then things just continued to get worse. This was 4 years ago, and I still suffer from chronic headaches. I also suffer now from chronic joint and muscle pain and constant fatigue because over the years my pain has just continued to get worse. And for the first 2 years that I was sick, we didn't know why. And this just added to the frustration, to the confusion, to the desperation, and to the fear. Just wondering, God, am I ever going to get better? And my job as a 15-year-old girl is to go to school and to study, and I'm not able to do that. And I love being social and hanging out with friends, and I'm not able to do that. And so just seeing it continue to get worse was just so devastating and heartbreaking. And we'd go to doctor after doctor just hoping that things would change and that they'd have a cure, have an answer of what I was dealing with and why I was sick. And no one could help us for the first 2 years. After 2 years, though, we went to a Lyme disease specialist, and he diagnosed me with Lyme disease. But I've continued to be sick, and it's been 2 years of being on treatments now for Lyme disease, and there has been some decrease in my pain, but at the same time, it's still continued. A couple weeks ago, I had to go home for a week before fall break. I was studying at school, and 2 weeks in a row, I'd go to classes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and would push through, and then Thursday and Friday, I couldn't attend classes because my pain was too intense. And I go through these cycles of pushing through something and then paying for it later. And my pain just gets worse later. And so after going through this 2 weeks in a row, made the decision that I needed to go home to take time to rest. And it was almost like sophomore year of high school all over again, with just feeling like, okay, I'm gonna get better, right? I'm gonna take this time to rest. And now I'm back at school and I'm not better, but I needed to come back and I couldn't just stay at home. And it's incredibly frustrating and painful to go through this over and over again. And I just keep asking God, why do I have to go through this, and how long is it gonna take? Will I ever get better? And where are you in the middle of this? Don't you care that I'm suffering and that it's not getting better and that I can't go to classes, and don't you want that for me, and don't you want me to build relationships with friends, but I don't have the energy to do that, and when are you going to heal me?
I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where? 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 Where does my help come from?
The storm, the questions, the doubts, the fears come for each of us in different ways. And as the song in the beginning said, the storm's coming, don't run for cover. I invite you in the next couple days to reflect in your own life. What are the storms? What are the questions? What are the fears? What are the doubts? And instead of running, to live into those. You're dismissed.